Today we have Barry Worrall. He's a secretary to the UK Men's Movement and in charge of the Cheltenham Group. He feels marriage is being destroyed. Barry, tell us a bit about that.
Well, it has been destroyed. Because if you compare the difference between people who have cohabited and those who've married, the outcome is, and when a separation occurs, the outcome is very similar. But for those men who were married, in fact, the outcome is slightly worse than the outcome of cohabiting, because the judges use the marriage as an excuse to withhold some of that man's life savings or make them across to the woman. So the men who commit themselves to marriage are actually worse off, typically, than a man who just cohabits. But of course the government has been removing other rights in marriage, such as the married person's tax allowances as well. So we've now got a situation in which, because women ordinarily get custody of the children, especially young children, and that's used as an excuse to ask the man to make over a lot of life savings, sometimes most or all of the life savings, and payments for the children. That background situation has meant that men end up in many cases in a legally situation without any rights, hardly. And this is done partly because judges have discretion over these matters. So men are entering into cohabitation situations and into marriage without knowing what the outcome might be on separation, because it's not written down anywhere, any of the written laws. There are some guidelines in the written laws, but they give very wide scope to judges to use their discretion in these situations. And of course the judges have introduced two principles. First of all, no-fault divorce, and that's very significant, because it means that a woman can leave a man, commit adultery, or just abandon the man, and yet still be rewarded with most of the man's life savings and maintenance for the children, and in some cases maintenance for themselves when they weren't working. The second principle that was introduced, well, actually by the Parliament, but also supported by the judges, is the child's best interests principle. And that principle has allowed judges to put the rights or the needs, as they see it, of children before those of the parents. So when two parents go to court, and in case of separation and divorce, all the legal actions are between the two parents in most cases, the judges are allowed now to bring in a third party's so-called needs and make those superior to the needs or rights of the two parents. And of course, in a situation in which men don't have much rights over custody, what used to be called custody, what's now called residence, and don't have any rights hardly over their life savings, the money that they've earned, and even have limited rights over their future income, because it can be removed for maintenance for the child and the woman. In that situation, the children's best interest principle is used to rise more than roughshod over the men's rights, the man's rights. It's through that application of those two principles primarily, the no-fault divorce and through the child's best interest, that men have ended up without any definable, tangible rights in marriage if the woman doesn't want them to have any rights.
Now, on this matter of the child's best interest, if that truly were the case, I presume you wouldn't object.
That's right, we wouldn't object if it truly were the case. But there are many aspects of the situation that are never borne in mind by the judges. I think that the no-fault principle, combined with this, allows a woman to misbehave. So, just desert a man, have an affair with the man's best friend, and yet still obtain the benefits of ongoing benefits from the marriage, because the judges use this child's best interests principle to supersede what the man's legitimate rights might have been, might otherwise be. And it's only the child's best interest insofar as day-to-day care is concerned, you know, so who actually physically looks after the children, the children on a day-to-day basis, and financial support for the children, financial support for the mother and the children, together with the children. But if you bear in mind that a woman can now commit adultery or just desert the man, or behave, you know, misbehave in lots of different ways, then the children are effectively seeing their mother being rewarded for bad behavior. And that can't be good for children's moral outlook and the view that children take of society and people's behavior in society. And yet many children now see their mother's behavior in that way. In other words, behaving badly, but being rewarded for that being behaving badly.
So in this sense, you're saying the best interest of the child is interpreted more as the best interest of the child with the mother in mind.
Exactly, yeah. Remember that when money is handed over for maintenance of the child, that money doesn't actually go to the child, it goes to the mother. And so we've got the situation now in which women can continue to receive the benefits of the marriage while getting rid of the man. And this happens in a large number of cases, of course, because the divorce statistics show that about 70% or thereabouts of divorces are brought by the women. And there is no penalty for them, you know, if they choose to get rid of a husband, there's absolutely no penalty for it. In fact, they end up better off, because if they, while married, you could consider that they share half the assets of the family. After separation, after divorce, they often own 2/3 or 3/4 of the assets. And they still get maintenance from the father. And even when remarried, continue to get maintenance from the father. Now, if you think about it, a woman that was married, an ordinary married woman, with the husband, may have one and a half or two incomes, and they will, you know, make their way through life with that income. But a woman who gets rid of a husband and gets maintenance for the children and gets remarried, well, they'll have, in that new family, that woman will have one or one and a half or two incomes, whatever their working circumstances are, plus income from the previous husband, which is, so ordinary women don't have that. So a divorced woman ends up better off through that mechanism. So there's no disincentive not to get rid of a husband. There's every incentive to get rid of a husband through the application of the no-fault principle and the children's best interest principle.